Egzamin maturalny z języka angielskiego. Rozumienie ze słuchu. Poziom rozszerzony. Wysłuchaj dokładnie informacji dotyczących tej części egzaminu. Rozumienie ze słuchu trwa 25 minut i składa się z trzech zadań. Zadania te sprawdzają umiejętność rozumienia wypowiedzi rodzimych użytkowników języka angielskiego. Usłyszysz nagranie, które zawiera zarówno teksty, jak i instrukcje do wykonania zadań. Każdy tekst zostanie odtworzony dwa razy. Na płycie przewidziane są przerwy na zapoznanie się z treścią zadań oraz ich rozwiązanie, sygnalizowane dźwiękiem. Przed wysłuchaniem każdego tekstu usłyszysz natomiast dźwięk. Rozwiązuj poszczególne zadania zgodnie z poleceniami w trakcie słuchania tekstów oraz w trakcie trwania przerw po ich wysłuchaniu. Zadanie czwarte. Przeczytaj uważnie polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania.
Today I'm talking to Dr. Colin Young, who is one of the most experienced conservation experts in Belize. Dr. Young, can you tell us how your background has influenced your current work?
The Community Baboon Sanctuary was my father's idea. It is dedicated to protecting the endangered black howler monkey, locally called a baboon. In fact, my father was the founder of the sanctuary, so from early childhood I had ample opportunity to learn about the plant and animal life in this place. As a teenager, I became a tour guide here, and part of my job was explaining to tourists why the protection of the animal's natural habitat is so crucial. With this sort of experience, it was just natural that I took over my father's duties when he passed away.
I've heard the sanctuary is one of the most successful conservation projects in Belize. Can you explain why?
Today, the sanctuary receives about 15,000 visitors annually. Their money means employment for the locals, who offer bed and breakfast accommodation, horse and canoe rental, and many other attractions. The local people participate in the decision-making process and are interested in the success of the undertaking. They are aware that their well-being depends on the well-being of the baboons, so animals are safe here, and we don't have to spend any money on hiring guards, as happens in other places.
I know your work has led you into other conservation areas. What's your main area of interest today?
Recently, I became very interested in different uses of plants. Medicine men and women are dying, and knowledge of their medicinal properties of local plants is dying with them. There is nobody to continue their work. Young people prefer to move to the cities, where they turn to more profitable career options in business, law, and education.
And what about opportunities for students interested in conservation? Are natural sciences the focus of academic study in Belize?
They definitely should be, but the government is not doing much to open university programs in natural sciences. Sure, students get science in primary and secondary education, but graduate degrees in this field are not currently offered by our universities. So to pursue master's or doctoral work in the natural sciences, people must leave Belize, and that's hardly an encouragement.
Finally, can you tell us what people can do to help the conservation effort in Belize?
Scientists must do more to engage the public in protecting the environment to a greater degree. And we must also begin to demand that the government invest more money in natural science research and infrastructure. These are the priorities for today.
Thank you, Dr. Young, for talking to us.
Wysłuchaj tekstu do tego zadania jeszcze raz.
Today I'm talking to Dr. Colin Young, who is one of the most experienced conservation experts in Belize. Dr. Young, can you tell us how your background has influenced your current work?
The Community Baboon Sanctuary was my father's idea. It is dedicated to protecting the endangered black howler monkey, locally called a baboon. In fact, my father was the founder of the sanctuary, so from early childhood, I had ample opportunity to learn about the plant and animal life in this place. As a teenager, I became a tour guide here, and part of my job was explaining to tourists why the protection of the animals' natural habitat is so crucial. With this sort of experience, it was just natural that I took over my father's duties when he passed away.
I've heard the sanctuary is one of the most successful conservation projects in Belize. Can you explain why?
Today, the sanctuary receives about 15,000 visitors annually. Their money means employment for the locals, who offer bed and breakfast accommodation, horse and canoe rental, and many other attractions. The local people participate in the decision-making process and are interested in the success of the undertaking. They are aware that their well-being depends on the well-being of the baboons, so animals are safe here, and we don't have to spend any money on hiring guards, as happens in other places.
I know your work has led you into other conservation areas. What's your main area of interest today?
Recently, I became very interested in different uses of plants. Medicine men and women are dying, and knowledge of the medicinal properties of local plants is dying with them. There is nobody to continue their work. Young people prefer to move to the cities, where they turn to more profitable career options in business, law, and education.
And what about opportunities for students interested in conservation? Are natural sciences the focus of academic study in Belize?
They definitely should be, but the government is not doing much to open university programs in natural sciences. Sure, students get science in primary and secondary education, but graduate degrees in this field are not currently offered by our universities. So to pursue master's or doctoral work in the natural sciences, people must leave Belize, and that's hardly an encouragement.
Finally, can you tell us what people can do to help the conservation effort in Belize?
Scientists must do more to engage the public in protecting the environment to a greater degree, and we must also begin to demand that the government invest more money in natural science research and infrastructure. These are the priorities for today.
Thank you, Dr. Young, for talking to us.
Przenieś rozwiązania na kartę odpowiedzi. Zadanie piąte. Przeczytaj uważnie polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania.
Every food item today must have a label giving nutrition facts about the product. But are these labels useful? Let's listen to some opinions. Speaker 1.
All right, food labels include useful nutritional information. But I think no amount of text will ever affect people's choices, for two reasons. The first one is that research shows that only 41% of men and 59% of women actually read the labels, and that doesn't necessarily mean they truly understand what's written there. The second reason is that getting the information doesn't mean acting on it. I don't believe food labels are enough to tempt shoppers into making better and healthier food choices.
Speaker 2. If, at present, only a certain percentage of people read the labels, that doesn't mean that the labels are inefficient and should be abandoned. In my opinion, the way the labels look is simply not tempting enough for people to pay attention to them. They should be printed on the front of the packaging, and their layout and overall visual impact has to be improved. If something is done in that area, consumers might take notice of the product's content. Speaker 3.
Well, in recent years, companies have discovered that labelling can be used to promote their products, and they are making use of it wherever possible. As long as the labels are truthful about the content, there's nothing to worry about. However, I remember the campaign of a cereal brand that was marketed as a health food to improve digestion. The new attractive design of the packaging went hand in hand with the marketing strategy. But a few months later, the claim was found to be false. Apparently, the label was designed to cheat us. And if one company did it, anyone may be tempted to do the same.
Speaker 4. Opinion polls show that the majority of people are opposed to genetically modified foods. It's great that a lot of them are already labelled accordingly. People who are against genetically modified food have the same right to be well informed, or rather warned, as those who want to limit fat or carbohydrates in their diet. I realise that forcing companies to label their products in a certain way might be an additional cost, but a company's profit can't be all that counts. It's really important for consumers to be aware of everything their food contains. Then they can decide not to buy products which they think might be risky for their health and well-being. Speaker 5.
More and more foods are processed, so it's good that food labels are included on packaging. Many of those labels are really well designed so that our attention is drawn to the important stuff. But to tell you the truth, they do not work very well for me. I find all the sophisticated names and numbers really confusing. I'm sure some of the information given is really crucial, but definitely not all of it. And when I'm overloaded with information, it puts me off. I'm not sure about others, but that's how I feel about it.
Wysłuchaj tekstu do tego zadania jeszcze raz.
Every food item today must have a label giving nutrition facts about the product. But are these labels useful? Let's listen to some opinions. Speaker 1.
All right, food labels include useful nutritional information. But I think no amount of text will ever affect people's choices, for two reasons. The first one is that research shows that only 41% of men and 59% of women actually read the labels, and that doesn't necessarily mean they truly understand what's written there. The second reason is that getting the information doesn't mean acting on it. I don't believe food labels are enough to tempt shoppers into making better and healthier food choices.
Speaker 2. If, at present, only a certain percentage of people read the labels, that doesn't mean that the labels are inefficient and should be abandoned. In my opinion, the way the labels look is simply not tempting enough for people to pay attention to them. They should be printed on the front of the packaging, and their layout and overall visual impact has to be improved. If something is done in that area, consumers might take notice of the product's content. Speaker 3.
Well, in recent years, companies have discovered that labelling can be used to promote their products, and they are making use of it wherever possible. As long as the labels are truthful about the content, there's nothing to worry about. However, I remember the campaign of a cereal brand that was marketed as a health food to improve digestion. The new attractive design of the packaging went hand in hand with the marketing strategy, but a few months later, the claim was found to be false. Apparently, the label was designed to cheat us, and if one company did it, anyone may be tempted to do the same.
Speaker 4. Opinion polls show that the majority of people are opposed to genetically modified foods. It's great that a lot of them are already labelled accordingly. People who are against genetically modified food have the same right to be well informed, or rather warned, as those who want to limit fat or carbohydrates in their diet. I realise that forcing companies to label their products in a certain way might be an additional cost, but a company's profit can't be all that counts. It's really important for consumers to be aware of everything their food contains. Then they can decide not to buy products which they think might be risky for their health and well-being. Speaker 5.
More and more foods are processed, so it's good that food labels are included on packaging. Many of those labels are really well designed so that our attention is drawn to the important stuff. But to tell you the truth, they do not work very well for me. I find all the sophisticated names and numbers really confusing. I'm sure some of the information given is really crucial, but definitely not all of it. And when I'm overloaded with information, it puts me off. I'm not sure about others, but that's how I feel about it.
Przenieś rozwiązania na kartę odpowiedzi. Zadanie szóste. Przeczytaj uważnie polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania.
When the editor of High Life magazine first suggested I go to New York with a bunch of holidaying ramblers, I assumed she was joking. For me, they were a bunch of eccentrics who gathered in herds to walk across the English countryside. They look at grass, birds, and hills, and then return home to complain about swearing on television. Why would they want to go to the most bustling metropolis on earth? And even more important questions from my point of view, why do I have to go with them, and how am I supposed to make them an attractive subject for our readers? I was confused, but I'd been given an assignment and I had to see it through. I met them at Heathrow Airport. Their leader was Nigel, and he should be described as a leader with a capital L. From the moment we arrived, they all looked to him for guidance on everything. The ramblers seemed to apply the same principle everywhere they went. You walk whenever possible, and you walk slowly. So as much distance as possible was covered on foot. Only once or twice did we decide to use the subway when we needed to transfer swiftly from one part of the city to another. They wanted to take in the must-sees included in the itinerary, as well as places off the beaten track, not mentioned on their list, whenever the occasion presented itself. They never hurried anywhere, but wandered along sleepy avenues and fashionable streets, and turned into every alleyway which caught their attention. And they were utterly delighted with everything they saw. They clapped at the architecture. They were thrilled when walking in Central Park, and they experienced the inevitable déjà vu that comes from recollecting scenes from the movies they'd watched. When one of them saw the fire escapes on the sides of the Brooklyn buildings, he yelled, "It's like in Breakfast at Tiffany's!" In Chinatown, another one yelled, "I saw this in Gremlins!" One afternoon, after walking for a few hours, we collapsed in a huge crammed diner called Barney's Delicatessen. We expected a long queue before being seated, as is often the case in central New York. But this time we were lucky and found a table almost immediately. The waiters, however, walked past and pretended not to notice us. When we finally caught their attention, they displayed the worst customer service this side of the Atlantic. Eventually, one of them slapped in front of us a huge sandwich which looked like an entire dead cow on a piece of bread. It was tasty, but nothing special. and we were charged for it as if we had ordered a three-course dinner. We couldn't believe that the bill for something that simple would be so much. The next day we went to Wall Street and the group stopped outside Tiffany's. They stared at the sparkling jewellery in the window, so I suggested we go in. The sales staff said a patronising, "Hello," as if they were doing us a favour by letting us in. Suddenly one of the ramblers, Pamela, said provokingly, "Eh, what a lot of cheap trash. You can buy stuff just as good in Salford Market for a tenth of the price. Who can tell the difference?" The look of superiority on the shop assistant's face and the unimpressed confidence on Pam's made me want to spontaneously sing the British National Anthem. I never thought I'd ever want to be part of a group of ramblers. Now I can't think of anyone better. Rambling around New York, they have swiftly rambled into my heart.
Wysłuchaj tekstu do tego zadania jeszcze raz.
When the editor of High Life magazine first suggested I go to New York with a bunch of holidaying ramblers, I assumed she was joking. For me, they were a bunch of eccentrics who gathered in herds to walk across the English countryside. They look at grass, birds and hills and then return home to complain about swearing on television. Why would they want to go to the most bustling metropolis on earth? And even more important questions from my point of view, why do I have to go with them, and how am I supposed to make them an attractive subject for our readers? I was confused, but I'd been given an assignment and I had to see it through. I met them at Heathrow Airport. Their leader was Nigel, and he should be described as a leader with a capital L. From the moment we arrived, they all looked to him for guidance on everything. The ramblers seemed to apply the same principle everywhere they went. You walk whenever possible, and you walk slowly. So as much distance as possible was covered on foot. Only once or twice did we decide to use the subway when we needed to transfer swiftly from one part of the city to another. They wanted to take in the must-sees included in the itinerary, as well as places off the beaten track, not mentioned on their list, whenever the occasion presented itself. They never hurried anywhere, but wandered along sleepy avenues and fashionable streets, and turned into every alleyway which caught their attention. And they were utterly delighted with everything they saw. They clapped at the architecture. They were thrilled when walking in Central Park, and they experienced the inevitable déjà vu that comes from recollecting scenes from the movies they'd watched. When one of them saw the fire escapes on the sides of the Brooklyn buildings, he yelled, "It's like in Breakfast at Tiffany's!" In Chinatown, another one yelled, "I saw this in Gremlins!" One afternoon, after walking for a few hours, we collapsed in a huge crammed diner called Barney's Delicatessen. We expected a long queue before being seated, as is often the case in central New York. But this time we were lucky and found a table almost immediately. The waiters, however, walked past and pretended not to notice us. When we finally caught their attention, they displayed the worst customer service this side of the Atlantic. Eventually, one of them slapped in front of us a huge sandwich which looked like an entire dead cow on a piece of bread. It was tasty, but nothing special, and we were charged for it as if we had ordered a three-course dinner. We couldn't believe that the bill for something that simple would be so much. The next day we went to Wall Street and the group stopped outside Tiffany's. They stared at the sparkling jewellery in the window, so I suggested we go in. The sales staff said a patronising, "Hello," as if they were doing us a favour by letting us in. Suddenly one of the ramblers, Pamela, said provokingly, "Eh, what a lot of cheap trash. You can buy stuff just as good in Salford Market for a tenth of the price. Who can tell the difference?" The look of superiority on the shop assistant's face and the unimpressed confidence on Pam's made me want to spontaneously sing the British National Anthem. I never thought I'd ever want to be part of a group of ramblers. Now I can't think of anyone better. Rambling around New York, they have swiftly rambled into my heart.
Przenieś rozwiązania na kartę odpowiedzi. Czas przeznaczony na tę część egzaminu minął. Sprawdź, czy wszystkie rozwiązania zostały przeniesione na kartę odpowiedzi. Następnie przystąp do wykonywania pozostałych zadań.